Are you ready for this? Let's go around the world in 80 seconds. Since we last met, England somehow managed to lose the ODI series as Butler was left jaded and mankaded in the fourth and fifth ODIs respectively, bashing brutal boundaries to no avail in the fourth and failing to respect his own in the fifth. A straight armophobe Sani Yarka caught the slog merchant napping and whipped off his bails to a chorus of boos. England then plucked Sam Robson from the obscurity of the Lord's dressing room, changed his shirt and pushed him back into the Lord's dressing room to limited success, apparently in an effort to make Cook look like a model of a attacking flair and consistency. After a record-breaking gap since last putting on his England Y-fronts, Liam Plunkett was also recalled to try and break some heads with his 90-mile-an-hour nutballs. England finally got pally with Moeen Ali, and Rihanna's mate Chris Jordan also debuted and wowed Lords in a hopeless final day as Cook served up dish of late declaration with lashings of not many runs. After Yorkshire Tykes' balance and route did shoot England to great totals in both innings. Meanwhile, in the provinces, tough-talking Irish Dexter lookalike Owen Morgan spiced up his England credentials with back-to-back hundreds to finally prove that as well as compiling blistering runs in front of thousands in high-pressure situations, he could also negotiate ageing medium pacers batting sedately when no one's watching. Borthwick scores a double hundred to retain the love and adoration put in by both Durham and All Out Cricket's Phil Walker. Someone get Surrey some Imodium, because they're in the runs as five of their top 600s. That's five of the top six score hundreds in the space of a week, including some stylish throwback runs from 90s batsman Vikram Smooth as Hal Solanke, while smoother like James, vastly talented Vince, fires a quick 240 and continues to give the Division 2s up to the rest of the league's bowlers. And around the world, Binny makes Bangladesh's bunnies and takes six wickets for four runs as India's rubbish low bar 180 is limboed under by an even rubbish 58 from Bangla, and Neesham and Kane prove they're able to give the West Indies the windies as they score hundreds as New Zealand beat the boys from the Caribbean in the first test. Oh, beautiful.
Well, that's our new feature, listener. It's called Round the World in 80 Seconds. Ross is exhausted.
Oh, no. Exhausting.
That was the All Out Cricket Pod Blast chat. No, that's not.
Have a breather.
He's broken, listener. I think we're all pretty amazed by that feat of endurance.
How close to 80 seconds did I get?
You went well over 80 seconds.
I'll get there next week.
He's going to take some time off next time. Ross, is there anything that you didn't discuss? Because I rather sort of feel like you pulled the carpet out from under our feet.
I did a smattering of subjects. I put it all out there. That's what happened since we last met. Now we can analyse that. We can go in close with the microscope.
Well, that's what we're going to do, listener. That was our new feature, Round the World in 80 Seconds. Yeah. And what we're going to be focusing on in the first section of this week's show is England versus Sri Lanka. Here in the studio to give us their expert analysis of that extremely tight game is, as always, Phil Walker and Joe Harmon. Okay, which one of you two wants to defend the timing of Alistair Cook's declaration first?
Oh, me. I will. Yeah, and I actually mean this as well.
Everybody means it.
No, genuinely I mean it. Genuinely I mean it. I thought it was, obviously you've got Holding slagging him off. You've got Warne slagging him off.
Yeah. Ian Pont slagging him off, actually. I was on Twitter
really?
Today.
Ian really?
Pont. Who's
really?
Ian Pont?
He is a coach.
That's fast bowling stuff. But yeah, I thought it was a tough one for Cook.
Ian Pont, Joe.
Yeah, we've got Pont.
Case closed.
Sorry, Ian.
Really flat deck at Lord's. Sangakkara in supreme form, even by his standards. New era, all that jazz. First test of the summer. You can't be losing to Sri Lanka at Lord's. And actually, his captaincy overall was pretty positive. Fair enough, he had 575 runs in the bank, but it shows it's a bit easier to be imaginative, innovative with your field placings when you've got runs in the bank, which he didn't have in Australia. So perhaps he could have given him 20 minutes, few overs at the end of day four. But I think what we should really focus on, rather than Cook's declaration, is how well England seamers did to get that many wickets as they did on day five.
Like a moody... moody peasant in a Caravaggio painting, Phil Walker leans nonchalantly in the corner with his own view. Phil, why don't you share it with us?
That was beautiful. Cook's declaration. It was one of those things. I think time conspired against him a little bit, really. I think been broadly pointless to have declared 20 minutes before the close, half an hour before the close, just to have three or four overs. I think by that point, it would have become next to pointless, really. And also, I kind of get bored by the hypocrisy of it all. You know, these kind of beasts sit up there in the commentary box, and when they were captains of their respective teams, you know, safety was always the first and most important factor of Test cricket, and then after that, you try and win a game somewhere down the line. And there's a lot of revisionism at work on that one. Strauss, because he's class, didn't actually mention that to Cook, but you know, Strauss famously held his declarations back. Gower did declare, leaving the West Indies 344 to win in 60 overs at Lord's in 1984, and they still go on about it now. Dozy Gower as skipper.
Although it was interesting on commentary, he said that actually the coach at the time, who would that have been? Can't remember. Anyway, the coach.
84, is it Mike Smith or something? Sure. Did they even have a coach? Was it just a chairman
of selectors?
It's kind of
like a gopher, isn't it? A manager type thing.
Whoever the coach was, they basically said, just 300 would be fine. That would be fine. So Gower actually pushed them back. So Gower wasn't being an aggressive captain. He was being negative compared to what was being offered.
And there was also talk about what Michael Clarke would have done. Well, Ali Cook has come off the back of a 5-0 humiliation and a bleak and bitter humiliation. Not just a defeat, but a humiliation. And it's over and above anybody's reasonable expectations for the man to have pulled them out that early. Instead, he gave himself 90 overs and that, you know, it was 4 and over for the target. Now, you know, the pragmatic argument is that you can set the fields that you want throughout the day. And I think that's a reasonable point.
It's worth remembering as well that before lunch, there was a point where they only had one wicket down, that it was starting to look a bit nervy as well, that it looked like Sri Lanka might even be able to knock off the runs in those. So it's easy when there's a flurry of wickets in the day to say, well, we should have had another 6 or 7 overs. But actually, in the context of the game, Cook did everything that he should have done.
Yeah, and Michael Clarke would have gone to a celebrity party with Shane Warne and Liz Hurley. That's what he would have done. So that's a very abstract thing. We can't even think about that.
What would Michael Clarke have done?
Always ask yourself, listeners, what would Michael Clarke do?
What would Shane Warne
if
have
you don't
done?
Know what to wear for a party, what would Michael Clarke do? If you don't know what to get for dinner, what would Michael Clarke do?
I mean, I've got my own view on this, but...
go on then.
I can't hold it back.
If you're not going to use this platform, when are you?
I'm live on the show. I can't be bothered to go into it. Because are we live? I think, generally speaking, there are two camps in relation to this game. And I'm going to move the discussion along.
Okay.
Because there's lots of great things to discuss about this game. The first media camp is, I'm going to call the Agnew camp, which goes, what a marvellous advertisement for Test cricket. And what a thrilling finale. And, you know, draw, win or lose, really, that was wonderful, wasn't it? That's the worst. And the second one is a kind of, Warne-inspired, Ian Pont-inspired, you know, just crazy desire
Ian
to
inspired
win.
It. Ian Pont. Just get over
you've
your
got Ian Pont on the brain.
Well, Pont was pontificating on Twitter, and so I'm going to name it after him. And then basically says that, you know, this is all part of a long narrative of Cook. And, you know, so there are two stories, and one of them makes sense, which is what you said, and the other one I think makes sense as well. I think if they're, I mean, what were they, 150 runs off still? I think it was a badly timed declaration. The evidence points to that. They didn't have enough time. You do have to give someone a sniff. It's not a declaration if you simply give 500 and give yourself
the
time to
sniff. That's the point. They don't give them the sniff. In Test cricket, it just doesn't happen like that.
This is not a declaration as we understand it then. The declaration itself, I don't think, It's a bit like the spirit of cricket. It's changed, hasn't it?
Well, sure, it's changed, but it's long obsolete, isn't it? And you get this in county cricket because the parameters of county cricket are different, and also the stakes are so much lower in county cricket. Listen, I would love, as a romantic, to see it. So you dangle that carrot and you say, "All right, well here's a target: 2.8, 3 and over 120 overs. See how you go." I would love to see that. And I was watching bits of it on the fourth evening. And notwithstanding balance, I really wanted England to get bowled out because I wanted them to be set 290 with not enough time to draw the game
and
to see
might,
a result.
That
would have been
a
glorious final day's cricket.
That might have done Cook a favour, but that wasn't the way Warne's commentary, it was disingenuous as well, and particularly on day four. He was saying, what we've got to remember is there's no right or wrong here. Captains have to decide the way they're going to go. And Cook's got to stay true to what he believes in. And then went on to go on and on and on about the fact that Cook was wrong. Having said that you've got to go with what you believe. And Cook backed his bowlers to do the job in 90 overs and came as many as, well, well, the width of an edge away from being bang on.
Okay, listener, well, you've had two sides of that debate. That's the great declaration debate.
Yeah.
We're going to have Ross leading on the second debate.
Oh, thank you.
Ross, how are the guys that had a debut for England in the course of the last game? And that's Balance and Moeen and Robson.
Balance was second, but yeah. Home debut.
Well pointed out. Who do you think was actually the most successful?
Was best.
Yeah.
No, very interesting. Interesting point, Al. Well, I'll tell you who looked the best. Chris Jordan. They could not stop going on about how good he looked out there, could they?
We'll go back so to this good. A little later.
Do you know what? Hours of commentary were given to... And I love the duality of... he looks very odd when he comes up to bowl, doesn't he? But he looks great.
I think you need to ask a technician here, and I've seen Joe Harmon bowl, so we're going to ask him. Joe, this thing they've got about
that,
if we
way.
Tweak something, he'll get a yard of pace. I've read it God knows how many times now. What do they mean? What are they going to tweak? What's the problem here?
Well, Jordan's already got a yard of pace added to what he had 2 years ago. So presumably he's already tweaked something.
Yeah.
In fact, he did a piece with us, didn't he, about generating pace, but I can't for the life of me remember what he said.
Yeah.
But I think it was to do with his run-up.
So this
he had
is
problems
it.
With his run-up, didn't
this
he?
Is the
which
final
still
product.
Looks a bit flaky,
yeah.
But it's better than it was.
What is it about
I can't tell you the specifics.
What is it about the run-up that's flaky, though? That's what
just
I
a bit.
Guess I don't understand.
The problem, I guess the problem with the run-up is a bit like Finn's run-up a couple of years ago. There's no impetus and momentum through the crease when there's no building to that crescendo. He plobs along, doesn't really get anywhere. He could bowl... Genuinely, you could bowl the same pace off three or four steps without a doubt because there is no gradual velocity increase through that run-up. You know, so if you look at someone like Akram, it was quite a casual run-up initially, but then there would be an explosion three or four steps before he gets to the pop increase. With Chrissy J, you just don't get that. He just bobs along, he's just cruising along, and then suddenly there's that explosion in the top half of his body. He's got quick arm, quick shoulder, and...
About.
I don't think it's a big issue. Personally, I don't think it's a big issue. I think if you can land it reasonably consistently and sharply enough, 86, 87, 88, regularly enough, then I think you can be a test player.
So he did used to, this is remembering bits of what he said, he used to tear in from a long run-up. And not only was he not bowling any quicker than he is now, but he was also causing himself injuries.
Yeah.
So he's got a more measured run-up and he's got in the action, which I guess in the long run might cause some injuries in itself.
I remember when I saw him bowl for Surrey when he'd just come over here and he looked just like Tino Best, that bustling, crazy run-up and then a jump, a big jump and a lot of kind of arms and legs going on and then it would be splayed down there somewhere and you wouldn't quite know where it was going to end up. And he had the look of a Tino in his action. So it's a lot more, dare I say, kind of anglicised now. It's more straight lines and it's more controlled.
He's modelled himself, in fact, on Craig White.
Has he really?
Is that right?
No,
that's a point.
That
was good.
Because Craig, of course...
Because he had that run-up, didn't he? He had that lolling, bothered run-up.
And then he changed to coming in off about three or four paces towards the end of his career and still bowled exactly the same pace,
all
if
in
not
the
faster.
All
in the arm was. That's technique corner, that. I very much
enjoyed
that.
So you're saying Chris Jordan is your pick for the debutant?
I think Chris Jordan was good. Whoever you decide is a debutant, I'll pick from, whether that's right or not. I think we shouldn't really be taking cricketers and going, what's special about them? Let's try and iron that out and remove it. Because I love what Chris Jordan
Would you
Jordan
rather
brings.
Focus on what's crap about them?
I want to focus on the quirks and the core and bring out those quirks. I want him to hold that ball even further in front of his body when he runs up.
Yeah.
I love it. And I think he is going to be terrific. I think the batting moments, which are really great, he looks great in the field. He looks great out there altogether.
Oh, he's looking fantastic.
But I think he's bowling at a really good pace as well. You know, maybe close to... what Plunkett was bowling at, who was apparently there to be the speed merchant and the enforcer anyway.
Yeah, I like the idea of actually adding unnecessary technical burdens upon bowlers. So maybe my suggestion would be for Chris Jordan that maybe he needs to not only extend the ball further away from his own phrase, but I'd also like a sort of Andy Carrick, Caddick L-shaped flourish.
Yeah, that would be good,
I think that would really add something to his bowling. So perhaps David Saker could take that up with him.
Yeah, stuff
because David Saker has a phenomenal record. Doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
He's bringing the best out of these bowlers. So maybe the Andy Caddick flourish, please, Saker. That'd be very nice.
But let's move on to that balance 100, shall we?
I think we should.
We're near there.
Okay, Joe. The balance 100. How important? You met the man.
I did. I met the man. I went up to Headingley a week or so ago to interview Balance and Stokes, a joint interview. The plan, I'll be honest, was that that was going to be England's middle order engine room for the next 10 years. As it was, that didn't last for a week as balance got moved up to three and Stokes didn't make the test squad. But Stokes is just a temporary thing. He's just got I think conditioning was the issue. He's got to get a few overs under his belt and he'll be back in there. Probably for Plunkett, I guess, as it stands, for the India series. But balance is an interesting one. They put him up at three. There's been much debate in the office. Phil has been gloating, having said that he should bat at three. I said Root at three, Balance at five, and I think I lost that one, didn't I? in fairness. But he's a very, he talks like he bats. He's very measured. He's very composed. He seems very comfortable with everything that he's doing. And you saw at the end of that innings, I think some of the commentators often don't see much county cricket. I think that's pretty obvious. And I think they're already starting to pigeonhole him as the next Jonathan Trott, just because he had batted for 20 overs without scoring a boundary at one point. But actually, that was just him playing the situation. And you saw for that about 65 to 100, he just let loose. And that's what he's got. And I love Jonathan Trott. And it's sorry, I'm sad to see him not in the side anymore. But he is far more adaptable in that position. Balance is far more adaptable in that position than Trott ever was and can play in two different ways or even more than that depending on the game situation.
Yeah, lest we forget, it was only a couple of seasons ago, Balance was the top six scorer in the T20. People tend to forget little nuggets that I've just brought to you.
So I asked Stokes and Balance what they would take from each other's game without spoiling the interview. Which bit they could take, and Balance said he wanted to strike a ball as cleanly as Stokes. And I did think at the time, you won the six hitting league, how clean as you want to strike it.
Exactly. He did do that on a lot of hooks, and they brought that boundary really quite far in for Balance. I think that was a plan.
Sorry, can I ask you quickly, what are you talking about?
Well,
about six hitting tournament?
In T20s, two years ago, Balance pigeonholed as some sort of new trot. Absolutely. He used to belt the ball for fun over the
But they don't have
anyway.
A six-hitting tournament the Sky, that
the Sky, it's, No, it's the Sky Sports six-hitting league. So they just accumulate the amount of six you hit over the year.
It's just the amount.
Because I always thought it's something... I mean, that's a brilliant idea. It's like the NBA dunk contest. You know, everybody gathers around, high-fives each other. Like, you didn't just do that.
I did. That would be great. Can we organise that?
Well, I saw a YouTube video of Ian Bell with Tim Bresnan, and everyone says, it's fake, and I've got no idea whether it is or isn't.
Oh, no, yeah, the trick shot.
Extraordinary.
It is genuine.
Instead
of a couple of tired teenagers who are very cold because they're wearing so little trying to cheerlead, and one bloke with a fire machine in the corner of a 60,000 stadium, I want that at half-time. That'd be absolutely cracking. A couple of trick shots from Bell. Get
Biggest
him on there.
Hits. Yeah, that would be beautiful.
Okay, we've still got a little bit of time for England-Sri Lanka. And I think that we probably have to focus on Robson, finally. His arm guard's a disgrace.
Agreed. Arm guards generally are.
A white polish. I understand it's lucky for him, so just maybe a little shoe polish.
Pads too. Pads are very grubby. They could do with a white wash.
Yeah, but it's the Chris Rogers influence. I mean, look at the state of his arm guard. And indeed, he was influenced by Justin Langer's arm guard, which was another horror show.
Well, it's a rich tradition then.
It's
I completely revive
I think they should be banned anyway. I think they show kind of vulnerability.
I noticed actually how little padding Cook wears. He doesn't wear a chest guard, doesn't wear an arm pad, which is, I think, I did notice he's got a thigh pad though. He's not crazy, is he? No.
He's a hard man, I think, at heart. That's what he doesn't get enough credit for. Apparently, Cook wants to bat without any helmet or pads at all. That's the idea.
That's your made-up stat.
That's my made-up quote.
Okay, excellent. So that was England-Sri Lanka. We're looking forward to Headingley very soon. Anyone got a prediction for Headingley to England now impose themselves?
Do you think they won a couple of... Will Phil Robson get runs at Headingley?
Yeah, he'll get a second inning 64.
I'm going
That's
67.
So specific.
I'm going 67.
That 67. Does feel right, though.
Second
it?
Dig, though.
Second dig.
England win the toss and bat. They get first innings lead. Robson goes in there and makes his maiden 50.
Yeah.
A bit too much to expect him to go on and make a ton, but he'll get 60.
It's
going to
be like our German octopus from the Football World Cup. What was the octopus called?
Yeah. But now we've got a... Is there some sort
Alan?
Of... Crowd?
Alan, yeah.
Alan, the octopus.
I don't think it was.
No, it was.
That actually brings me to the Wasp. I missed the beginning of the Wasp, and now the Wasp is ubiquitous. So the hell is the Wasp?
Because some sort of World Cup Wasp.
It's annoying me. No,
are you
cricket.
Saying Phil is our Wasp?
Sky Sports.
It's absolutely nonsense. Nan has rightly pointed out that at one point, I can't remember what the game was. That it went below 0% chance. It went below 0% chance of them winning, and then it went back up to 5% chance.
No, it didn't go below zero. It was at zero, but then it went back up again. which obviously makes a mockery of the whole thing, because once you're at zero, then you have to take it at its word. There's no way of winning the game. And then it went back up to 3 or 4.
So 5%. What does this wasp do? Fill me in.
It's a TV ruse, obviously.
Oh, so this wasp tries to predict the chances that we're going to win.
WASP, don't know what it stands for.
Oh, right.
Utter nonsense.
But they predict the score at the start, where they look at previous scores, and then like Bumble says, no, I don't really agree with that, I'll go up 4. And then the groundsman says, oh, maybe down 2. So they come up with this completely arbitrary score. And then they change that score depending on how things are going. And then it always looks like they're kind of right.
It's basically a kind of manufactured answer for those people who say, who's winning? Mm. Which is a pretty miserable and hackneyed question when it comes to cricket.
That's true.
So that's why it's there, really.
But it's not an actual wasp. That's what I want to know.
I don't know. I haven't seen
it. It's not a real wasp.
Inspired by a real wasp.
I would like to see an actual wasp in that scenario.
A white Anglo-Saxon Protestant.
Well, no.
Sitting
no.
right here, Ross.
No, I sort of, you know, the people's answer to the bee.
Okay.
All right. Handsome 11.
Ah, now this is something I've been looking forward to all day. We are going to try and pick the handsomest Test cricket team ever. Mm. And I put the emphasis on Test cricket because otherwise we simply would have picked ourselves. And we've had a bit of a look. I've been amazed by some of the names that have been coming out of Twitter today, Ross.
What are the names that have been coming right out of Twitter, Al?
First of all, guys, you know sometimes somebody says a name and you go, I literally haven't thought about that person.
Yeah.
In
someone mentioned
years.
Sherwin Campbell today, and I thought, hasn't come up in my life. I don't know why. He just hasn't.
I know. All right, so my one is Adam Parore.
Adam Parore.
Yeah, Adam Parore, because I was searching around for a wicketkeeper, the handsomest wicketkeeper. Yeah.
We found him.
We found him. Godfrey Evans beforehand. Mm. So thank you very much to Charis Croft, who tweeted in. She said, Adam Parore, utterly breathtaking.
Yeah,
he's a dreamer. He climbed Everest, you know, after he stopped wicketkeeping as well.
No.
Yeah?
No.
Maybe base camp.
He probably
did
it for charity, didn't he?
Climbed the Everest of my heart.
And he's a lawyer, you know, he's a qualified lawyer.
No, stop it, Joe.
Stop it. Do you know what? He looks a little like the fifth member of the Saved by the Bell gang. Like the, I don't know why the fifth member. About six of them.
Boy band.
But no, yeah. But for me, they were. But yeah, he looks a bit like, he looks quite... Yeah, American college handsome, doesn't he?
He's very clean cut. Anyway, anyone wants to see what Adam Parore looks like, you can obviously go on the internet, which is this thing you can go on, or you can just go on our Twitter feed, which would be much more fun. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to get you guys going because I found a website devoted to
get us going.
Top 10 most handsome cricket players in the world. And I thought, oh, somebody's done it before. But these entries were so bizarre and so strange that, I mean, first of all, we have the one-eyed eyebrow wonder Virat Kohli. And this is what it has to say about him. Standing tall at 5'9", this single hot cricketer is good looking as well as passionate. Hence is every woman's desire.
Oh,
I like the addition of the word hence. And consequently is everyone's desire. So we got, incredible. Virat Kohli at number one. Shahid Afridi here is both charming and impressive. Shane Watson has a robust body and a gorgeous face.
Ooh.
Michael Clark, who we discussed a little earlier, Ross, a wonderfully sculpted physique and a smile that could melt your heart. This mature and successful cricketer is the whole package.
This is like some sort of dating website.
AB de Villiers, charming and traditionally good looking.
It's like I'm about to buy one on eBay.
The mask character in that Cher film, I've always thought.
Oh, is that right? He looks like Nicolas Cage in Moonstruck.
No, it's called Mask, isn't it?
Oh, Mask.
You know,
that,
I think
that
you're
one.
Cher's Mask Son.
Cher, not Cher.
I believe that was played by Eric Stoltz.
Bang on.
Yeah. Who looks like that?
He's
AB,
don't you think?
That's harsh.
All right, jumping down, we've got Kevin Peterson, who has a well-rounded personality. Big one. It was so ridiculous, I could barely say it. And alluring looks.
Ooh, so is it all these annoying? People sort of look furious on the cricket field. Is that what everyone's looking for in the ideal man? Sure. Just a furious man.
I'd say a problem area we're going to have on handsome cricketers is openers. But this sportiology.com's Alistair Cook in at number 8 with a towering height of 6'2" and a gorgeous jawline. This suave cricketer could make any girl go weak in her knees.
Ooh,
so as Alice,
the writer of this is clearly minute. A towering 6'2" and standing tall at 5'9".
I wrote it. I confess, it was me.
Alex, for the listeners who don't know, he's actually 5'3".
So wicketkeeping, I thought wicketkeeping was going to be problematic until we came across Adam Parore, but we had
straight
a tweet in earlier saying Sangakkara because of his hair. And this blog would agree. It says Sangakkara is 34, but he's the most handsome amongst all his team members.
Oh, even though he's slightly older.
Damned by faint praise, I think, yeah. Sangakkara.
I think Sangakkara, yeah. I mean, I must start this by saying I have no concept of male beauty. But having said that, Sangakkara does it for me.
Yeah. He's got the aura about him as well.
He does.
I'd say,
have
of all cricketers I've met, he kind of...
Did he have a great aura?
He takes the room.
Can I get you started then? Because I had an attempt at a handsome 11 of great cricketers.
Okay.
And this actually came from a discussion on Twitter at the weekend about whether the current England bowling lineup was the handsomest ever England bowling lineup.
That's where this is starting.
Which really comes down to whether you prefer Plunkett or Finn. But somebody else pointed out that Wacker, Wasim and Imran. And I thought, Wasim Akram? But anyway, Imran Khan. I think we can all get behind Imran Khan. Captain of the team?
We don't go there. Was that a conscious pun? Anyway, go on. Innuendo City.
Number two, Ross, this one's for you. Yep. Your personal favourite, Ravindra Jadeja.
I do like Jadeja.
Yeah, that's a great shout. Some
of those guys in that team have got some fantastic facial hair.
Yeah,
do you know what? You know, a lot of that facial hair that's going around at the moment in East London, you know, it doesn't necessarily enhance the look of a person, but that facial hair they're rocking in India, just, it really gets me.
I've gone back to the old school with my third all-rounder. It must be something about them. Keith Miller.
I knew you'd say that.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course. Swashbuckler. I read The Night Watchman. Fascinating thing in The Night Watchman on Keith Miller and his war record. Really enjoyable by, I think, John Hotton's the old batsman. Mm-hmm. Somebody else. But anyway, in The Night Watchman, Keith Miller, war hero and general piece of totter.
James Holland, perhaps?
Sure. War historian.
Yeah, that'd be James Holland.
Okay. And then finally, completing the four all-rounders, Ross, your suggestion, controversial at the moment. Who is he, Ross?
Chris Cairns. The man's a hunk. Disgust.
Incredible for a man who's got no appreciation of male beauty. Yeah. He really jumped on board.
I had to prefix this whole conversation by saying I could be completely wrong. That's all I'm saying. But he's, you know, this hulking...
You just like a bad boy, don't you?
That's
it comes down to.
So who's next then? Van Damme? Chuck Norris.
Where are you taking us?
Just
big guys.
Just
bears.
Just bears.
Alternative cricket from Radio Cricket came in today. Said number one, Zafar Ansari. Number two, Zafar Ansari. And number three to 11, as above Zafar Ansari. And that was concurred with. What do you think? Ansari.
He's got style. He's cool.
Nice man.
He's not handsome in the strictest kind of manae idol style.
What did you say about him?
But he does have something about him.
He looks a little like a band that could support One Direction at the O2.
Okay, well, thanks to everybody who's been tweeting in about that. Can we just say something to AkshayP5000, who really got into this?
This is good.
Really in the right spirit. Got in touch and said, at All Out Cricket, at Cricket Podblast, Alistair Cook, James Anderson, Mitchell Johnson, brackets, without the moustache, close brackets, Ricky Ponting, Faf du Plessis, Shane Watson. I don't do this in my spare time.
That's very good.
I like du Plessis, he deserved it.
Yeah.
Ricky Ponting, there's an odd one.
That, no, that's good. Mitch Johnson, much like Jade Dernbach, is one for the rockabilly community.
Yeah,
I think he's got an alternative appeal.
And just a final point, a nod to Martin Moxon, who declared on Twitter, as Joey pointed out to me last week, Liam Plunkett is 29, but fit.
Martin Moxon said that.
I thought you were giving Martin Moxon a shout out for your handsome 11.
I was thinking Athy, Hugh Morris, Moxon. No. Yeah, Plunkett is 29 and fit, according to Martin Moxon.
What a perfect moment to leave the handsome 11. Listeners, if you've got a handsome 11, you can tweet them into at All Out Cricket or at Cricket Podblast, and we can do another section on handsome 11 next time. Lovely. Ah, well, that's the end of the show. Quick roundup over the top of this smooth jazz. Ross, who has had a successful month in the County Cricket Championship?
Oh, moving on to County Cricket. Do you know what, actually? I'm going to go for Ravi Bow. Ravi Bapara, sometime England cricketer, full-time all-out cricket diarist, has been terrific in the T20 Blast, blasting Essex to the top of the tree in their half of the T20.
Televised game.
Generally looking great.
Big Champo Tan as well.
Big Champo Tan as well, yeah. He's looking terrific, Ravi Bo. It's not all about the unsung heroes. He's a sung hero to me, but he's had a great month.
You feel?
Well, obviously Scotty Borthwick, who you once declared by a run. Well, he's gone double 100, brilliant double 100, and then a 92 today to probably win them the game. And Zafar Ansari as well, who made a 90 and an 80 and 100 in the current game against Derby, I think, and also took 3 or 4 wickets as well. Good young cricket.
Shout out for Coughlin.
Yeah, 85 from number 10, and then 3 first innings wickets.
Second innings, yeah.
I was going to go Alex Hales, actually.
Yeah.
Who's 96 and 94 to see, well, pretty much see Notts over the line against, who are they playing?
Middlesex.
Middlesex, Big Chase. Got a massive 100 off 130 balls in the game before that as well.
Alex Hales.
And James Vince.
Let's not forget James Vince. We haven't forgot you, James.
We haven't forgot you.